The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome to First Bite, our Detroit Lions normally preview podcast, but not today because the Detroit Lions are on their bye week. They are 1-3. Things are in chaos, so we are here to help navigate through such chaos, hopefully make you feel a little bit better. If not, maybe we'll get out some rage that you can use vicariously. We'll see. We're going to get into a lot of angry questions that we got this week because it is going to be our mailbag version of First Bite. But before we get into any of that, my name is Jeremy Reisman. I am the managing editor of Pride of Detroit. I'm your co-host of First Bite. And with me, with a unusual look on his face, I'm pretty sure that's not how he usually looks, is our good friend and co-host, Ryan Matthews. Ryan, how you doing, buddy?
I was trying to channel my inner Tyler Hero with the little snarl. Mm.
Is that how you say his last name? Because I was always nervous about how to say his last name out loud. I did not like what it sounded like in my brain.
Like it was supposed to. Oh, okay. Yeah. No. It's just Hero.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Which he is not being anymore because it looks like the Lakers are going to have this wrapped up, kind of like how the Lions season's pretty much wrapped up at this point.
Oh, wow. I was going to commend you on that segue, but then it was mean spirited. So now I don't like it.
I will be kind from here on out.
I appreciate that.
Firm but fair.
As I teased, this is going to be an all mailbag episode. We asked for your questions over the past 24 hours using the hashtag AskPOD on Twitter, which you can send questions any time of the week. We'll try to get to them either on the podcast, maybe through Twitter, maybe through written form. We're probably going to be doing a lot of mailbags because we might be searching for some content to make because you guys probably aren't too interested into, diving into film. I mean, you are probably now, but things continue to go south. We'll see. Anyways, we're just going to jump right into it. Obviously, there's a lot of coaching talk. So I think this first segment is going to kind of talk all about coaching, and then we'll get to more detailed questions about this year's Lions, maybe the future Lions, that sort of stuff. But let's start with coaching. Let's start with probably the biggest story nationally regarding the Lions. All thanks to your good friend, Ryan, Dan Orlovsky. He seemed to take umbrage with something Matt Patricia said in that saying in his post game press conference. He says, when I took over, we had a lot of work to do. And a lot of people took that quote. A lot of people were very angry about that quote. A lot of former Lions that were on Jim Caldwell's team were very upset, saying this team had a lot of work to do. They were obviously coming off back to back 9-7 seasons, one of those being a playoff season, but no playoff wins. Our first question comes from A.V. King James in regards to this quote, and he says, the Lions have gotten a lot of national attention due to a lot of ex-Lions speaking out recently, but locally it's been a thing from the moment Patricia took the job 2 years ago. Is this typical regime change politic or indicative of a deeper change in the culture? First, before we get into that question, Ryan, are you at all up in arms about this quote from Patricia? Is this something that bugs you? Is this more arrogance from him that you don't like to hear from him right now?
I don't think it bothers me nearly as much as the first comment he made about, making one of the biggest plays in you know, Super Bowl history.
Yeah.
I think what this is I think that this is just Matt Patricia opening up his mouth and sticking his foot in it. And I really think that this is kind of coach speak. I think that's what it really comes down to. I think that this might be one of those canned phrases that every coach says, because if you don't have a lot of work to do, then you look pretty bad with your 10-25-1 record.
Right.
So I think that that's just like a mindset that you adopt, that you have a lot of work to do. And I think from the standpoint, I think his comments hold water when you think about it from the standpoint that when he came here, there was a lot of work to do in terms of putting the players that he wanted in his scheme and, you know, implementing all the things that he wanted done.
Yeah.
So I think that there's some truth to that. But like I said, I think the comments were way more arrogant when he, you know, tried to say that he was responsible for one of the greatest defensive plays in the history of football. But
yeah, I'm with you there. And Patricia got a chance to respond to all the criticism too. And he said, you know, got a lot of work to do is kind of a term that he uses all the time, which is true. He says it like after every game, we got a lot of work to do. We got to get better, all that sort of stuff, all that things. And I'm also with you on that very last point that you made regarding, you know, it was a lot of work to do to implement his vision. What he wanted to do took a lot of work. What he wanted, his culture, he wanted his style of players, that was a lot of work. The question is, did it need all of that?
It looks pretty ugly.
Yeah, I think the answer is probably not. The Lions did have enough talent. Their culture wasn't bad. It wasn't what his culture what he wanted the culture to be. So in order to get the team to his vision, yeah, I think it was a lot of work. And in that case, I don't blame him. Like, that's how he wanted to build the team. The Lions knew that. The Lions hired him because of that. Bob Quinn hired him because of that. So I think Matt Patricia saying what he did say actually doesn't bother me that much. Now that I think about it, it's just like, no, that's what he wanted to do. What bothers me is the fact that he did do all of that, that the Lions decided that instead of building on a 9-7 team to you know, take the next step up, they decided to completely get rid of the stairs and start all over. And that was a decision that everyone in management made. This wasn't a thing that they were like, oh, we didn't expect you to do that, Matt Patricia. This is something that the whole organization agreed that the team needed. So everyone is culpable from the top down.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't think that he's the only one that deserves blame, or I don't think. But here's the thing. When you're on the hot seat the way that he's on the hot seat, like, the lights are really bright and they're really hot. And anything you say, like I said, open up foot, you know, open up mouth, insert foot at this point, because anything he says, it's like he's really just fighting against a wave of people who just want to see him fail. Yeah. And I think a lot of those people have every right to feel that way, especially with their patience wearing thin after, you know, close to two and a half seasons now.
Yeah, and I mean, he's really in a no-win position when it comes to post-game press conferences, right? Like, he can be the most boring person and try to avoid all these kind of controversies, but then people are going to be like, I'm sick of his coach speak. Why won't he tell us something real? It's like, well, then if he goes out and tries to say something, he'd be like, oh, he's dogging the players. Oh, he's throwing his other coaches under the bus. It's like, well, what is there anything he could... Let me ask you that. Is there anything he could literally say in a post-game press conference? You'd be like, God, that's nice to hear.
No, because I think that what we're talking about right now is exactly an example of, like, trying to toe the line of, like, not being too hard on the players and also trying not to, like, say too much canned coach speak. Like, he's just trying to, like, find this balance where he can maybe just, like, Matt Stafford his way out of a press conference.
Right.
But he really can't. Like, anything he says is just going to be taken up by whatever and you know, magnified and blown up to 100 times what it actually is. So
yeah. All right, well, let's go back to the original question about all the X lines kind of coming out and saying what they will. Do you think this is just kind of, you know, regime change stuff where Dan Orlovsky's mad that he's kind of dogging, or it's a perceived slight towards maybe himself and Jim Caldwell? Or do you think this is indicative of, like, a big culture issue maybe that's in Detroit now?
You know, I'm not a huge fan of Matt Patricia, and I think that that's been, like, well documented. So, sure. But by the same token, I'm getting really, really tired of everybody looking back on Jim Caldwell with rose-colored glasses.
Sure.
I think the one thing about Jim Caldwell that I did appreciate, though, was the way that it was more than just football, and I appreciate that approach. Like, he was interested in not only developing football players, but developing, like, young men into, you know, respectable, upstanding citizens. I mean, and, sure. Dan Orlovsky aside, because he's not one of those people. Stephen Tulloch, like players like that. I mean, they're active in their communities, and even people like Darius Slay, who was brought in here when, you know, Jim Caldwell was, you know, under tenure. You see a lot of those players go on to do great things for their communities and things of that nature.
Quandre Diggs. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Appreciate the things of that nature reference.
Yeah, you like that. But I think if anybody has a reason to be wistful and to miss Jim Caldwell, I think that's the reason to miss him.
Right.
Jeremy, I know that you absolutely, like, it drove you nuts when it came to clock management and Jim Caldwell. And when it came to, you know, certain decisions that he made in terms of, you know, field position and things of that nature. But I'm really out on Patricia at this point. I think everybody is. I think when he made those comments that everybody was just kind of tired. And I think people are tired of the shtick. Even, you know, he made that perceived leap, though, from year one to year two. You know what I mean? Like, year one, mm-hmm. he maybe came in and he was a little bit too, you know, Tommy Tough Nuts.
Yeah.
And now he kind of eased that back a little bit. But at this point, like, the proof is in the pudding. And you can take a look at the record and you can't mince words anymore. And I think the unfair thing is to compare Matt Patricia's tenure with Jim Caldwell's tenure. You should be comparing Matt Patricia's tenure with, like, Matt Millen era coaches at this point.
I mean, record wise, yeah, it's the same vein there. And yeah, I think you're right. There is a little bit of whitewashing happening with Jim Caldwell. I always contend that I would have liked to see one more year out of him. But when you consider that one year would have been paired with Bob Quinn, maybe I don't want that, since Bob Quinn openly admitted he was more comfortable drafting for someone that he's more in line with in terms of philosophical football reasons. To kind of go back to the original question, though, do I think, like, maybe there's a deeper culture issue in Detroit now? The one thing I will say about this team is that they haven't shown any signs of any culture issue anymore. There certainly was in those first 2 years with Matt Patricia. I think that's been well documented now. I think at this point he's kind of purged all of the naysayers, all the disbelievers, all the dissenters. And so now they have a pretty clean locker room in terms of what Matt Patricia wants it to be. And I don't see any cracks in that foundation yet. And maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. Maybe he's got all the kind of guys that are very, very tough mentally, but that doesn't matter when the wins aren't coming. And so I think, you know, one of the things I've consistently said here is, like, yeah, we're getting, like, these high character guys that are all about football, like football robots, is I think what I've referred to them in the past. But they got to play too. They got to be good at what they do when they get on the field. So that's my biggest issue with the whole culture thing with Patricia, is that he's so laser focused on guys that'll buy in that he's probably passing up on some talent.
Yeah. I think the one other thing I want to add to that is that you had such a wide array of players under Jim Caldwell. I mean, you had, like, your Stephen Tulloch, but then you had your Darius Slay, who's a little bit more eccentric, but then you also had your Glover Quinn, who is just, like, the consummate professional.
Right.
And all of those guys speak glowingly of Jim Caldwell. And none of those guys say nice things about Matt Patricia.
Right.
So, I mean, again, the proof is in the pudding.
Yep. All right, next question, sticking with coaches and a little bit of GM talk. From your boy Ben on Twitter, he asked, do you think there is a scenario in which Patricia Quinn used the excuse of a down year from Stafford / the COVID offseason to get themselves another year, but with a rookie quarterback? If so, what is your drink of choice next year? No chance?
No chance. I mean, just absolutely no chance. I don't think that Sheila Ford Hamp will allow that to happen. I think that at this point, and I don't really buy into the no fans in the stands, it's not loud enough in terms of the dissenters, in terms of the people who are out on Patricia. I don't buy into all that. Like, log on to Twitter. Like, it's the 21st century. You know what I mean? Like, check out any social media. You go anywhere. I don't have a Facebook anymore, so I can only imagine the type of swamp, the type of cesspool that Facebook is at this point. But I don't think that that's a viable excuse. I mean, it was last season, right? Like, losing Stafford for 8 games.
Sure.
You know, everything was there to kind of say, you know, Patricia's second year was kind of marred by that. I don't think you can make that excuse because everybody had to deal with the same circumstances.
Right. That's the key right there. Everyone's going through it. Some teams are going through it a lot worse than the Lions. If you've seen the Seahawks injury report, it's about 25 players deep each week, not to mention all the COVID stuff going around.
I was going to say, do we really need the Tennessee Titans? Can we just like excommunicate them from the NFL?
Maybe. But then, yeah. And then, I mean, you can't use Stafford had a down year as an excuse, because guess who's his coach this year? You guys.
For his third year.
Yeah. So, I mean, if Stafford has a down year, sure, that's on Stafford, but it's also kind of on you guys. So, you definitely can't use that as an excuse. I think if this team doesn't win at least, I don't know, 7 games, like, it's over.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the threshold that we kind of set at the beginning of the season. I think it was, I mean, Jeremy, you've always said that as long as Matthew Stafford is your starting quarterback, you shouldn't have double digit losses.
Right.
So, mean, I can't really argue with that. Yeah.
Next question comes from RayRay1222. He asks, if the Lions do let go of Quinn Patricia, what would be the earliest week in your opinion? Or do you think the Fords don't make a move until after the season? What are the pros and cons of both scenarios? This is always an interesting question. I think a lot of Lions fans were hoping it would happen this week. I think it's pretty clear it's not going to happen this week now. How bad does it have to get, Ryan, do you think, for it to happen in the middle of the season?
I mean, with the way that the Lions schedule is lined up, with you know, teams that are benching their quarterbacks like the Washington football team,
mm-hmm.
With teams that are winless, with teams that are really struggling. I mean, their next, what is it, like 7 games? Like, they have probably one of the easier schedules in football when it comes to win-loss records.
Yep.
If it gets real bad, like if they go like winless over that time, I don't think Patricia sticks out for the entire season.
Yeah.
I think that maybe he gets canned in week, what is it, like 13, 14, something like that. Like,
so like a 1-9 start or something like that. Is it over?
Yeah. I think you gotta call it quits on that. You gotta pull the plug.
Yeah. I hope it doesn't get to that, but I feel like, yeah, it has to be something. It has to be something like that. I mean, we saw, you know, the we Mayhew and Lewan go, and it was what, 1-7 start to the season, I think, that year.
Yeah,
Something like that. I mean, honestly, if they go 1-7, I wouldn't be surprised to see the GM and the coach go at the same time like that. Is there a lot of pros to that? Because that's the second part of the question. Is there pros and cons to that? And I mean, I don't see a lot of pros in mid-season firings. I don't really understand it. I think it placates the fan base a little bit. It gives them a little bit of hope, but you're not going to sell tickets to games either way. You're not going to sell a lot of people aren't going to buy a bunch of merchandise after you fire a head coach. That's not really how that works. So I don't. And like I said, this is a team that's bought into Matt Patricia. This is a team that, you know, you have Reggie Ragland saying this team should be 4-0. You have Reggie Ragland saying this team should be Super Bowl contenders. He's seen what a Super Bowl contender, and this team has all of that. And it's full of the locker room is filled with guys like that. And you know, firing him, I think, only hurts their morale and maybe hurts their performance even a little bit. Now, does that change if they're 1-8? Maybe, probably, at least a little bit. But I don't know. I don't really like midseason firings. I don't think there's a lot of pros to it. Do you see it any differently?
No, I think we're pretty much lock in step when it comes to midseason firings. I don't think that there's a huge advantage to like getting a head start on a GM search or getting a head start on a head coach search, because really at this point, like, the Lions have to sell themselves as a viable franchise for anybody to come and work for, because it's a little less attractive than when Patricia and you know, Quinn took over. There was a for sure franchise starting quarterback. Maybe that's not the case anymore. So I think I don't think that there's much to it. I think the only reason you pull the plug on Patricia is things become like Bill O'Brien bad. Like you're pissing off JJ Watt and JJ Watt is talking back to you at practice kind of bad. Like if things get that bad, if the relationship becomes untenable, well then yeah, you obviously pull the plug because you need like a positive work environment where that just can't exist. But for as much as I don't like Matt Patricia and for as bad as the Lions are at 1-3, if you fire him now, I think you're calling the season. I don't think that there's like Daryl Bevel gets, you know, promoted to interim head coach and the Lions are all of a sudden 10-6.
They can like, suddenly stop the run because Daryl Bevel's head coach.
Yeah. I don't. Well, that's maybe we'll get to that later in the mailbag if we're going to talk about like what kind of head coach we'd want in the future. But yeah, that's not going to happen with Daryl Bevel.
You know, let's actually jump into that now before we head to our break, because Big J Shaky in our comment section asks, all right, so let's just assume we get a new coach, we get a new GM. We're not going to throw out names out there because
pointless.
How many times do you want me to say Eric Bieniemy or Robert Saleh or whatever? Like, we've all already kind of cycled through all the names. You want Bill Cowher? Sure. Whatever. He asked more about the kind of person you want. So if you were all picking approaches from different teams, what blueprints would you want to follow? So what team, you know, who's done it before are you looking to follow? Like, are you doing Kansas City in a high-flying offense? Are you in San Francisco and Baltimore going primarily defense? The Packers, who are more aggressive in free agency? Obviously, the Patriots way hasn't worked. So what team dynamic are you looking to build in Detroit? Or is it something kind of a hybrid or your own thing?
Yeah, and I know I just mentioned earlier in the podcast about, you know, looking at Jim Caldwell's past with some rose-colored glasses, but like, I don't care if it's an offensive guru. I don't care if it's a defensive genius. Like, I want somebody who has head coach traits. And I'm not saying that he should be the head coach or anything, but I remember early in the offseason when the Lions got Braden Coombs, there was one of the beat writers. I think it may have been Mikey or it was Justin Rogers. I don't know. They all blend together. one of them mentioned like, Coombs just kind of like carries himself like a head coach. Like they could see him being a head coach someday. And I mean, he's a special teams coordinator. So, I mean, there's obviously a trajectory, like you follow a certain path and you eventually get to, and it seems like for the most part, you either have offensive or defensive coordinators that get promoted to head coach. I don't even care if it's that. Like, I just want somebody who is going to come in and be able to put people in position to do like the best job possible. And I know that might right. And I know that might kind of sound like a canned, like really easy fix, but like, I think people get a little bit too caught up in, well, do we want to have Eric Bieniemy because we want to have the Kansas City Chiefs offense? Like, guess what? You're not going to have the Kansas City Chiefs offense because you don't have Patrick Mahomes.
Right. Yeah, I think that's it's a good answer. And it was kind of the direction I was going to go in. I do want someone that is adaptable. I think maybe that's the most, both in terms of their leadership being adaptable to people that need a little bit more hands-on approach and maybe taking your hands off a little bit more with people that like to be loose and funny and whatever, they can go on social media. That's fine. It's not gonna hurt you or the organization. But also adaptable on the field, you know, just maybe surround someone who will surround themselves with people that don't necessarily line up with them. And I know that's rare. I know usually when you get a new head coach, they tend to bring in guys that they already know because, guess what? It helps in terms of chemistry with the team, but I do want someone that isn't going to come in and be, you know, sold on their way as the only way. And that's my approach. If we're talking offense versus defense, I probably want a more offensive minded coach. I really enjoy watching teams that are really, really good at offense. And, you know, I think when we talk about the smartest coaches in the league right now, you talk about the Chiefs, you talk about Andy Reid, you talk about
Sean McVay,
right? So I do think there's something to that. But I mean, even like Kyle Shanahan, you mentioned the 49ers, but that's an offense, like that's a really fun offense to watch too. And so I would probably lean offense if we're talking, you know, offense versus defense, but ultimately I just want someone who's a little bit more flexible than the guys we got in there right now. That's it.
Some guy who will just like be okay with having talent on his team.
Yes. Yes. And yeah. All right. And with that, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get off the coaching stuff for a little bit. We'll talk a little bit more about this Lions team. What's going wrong? What's going right? What's coming up ahead? So stick around. We'll be right back on our First Bite Mailbag podcast.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
And we are back with First Bite, our Detroit Lions preview podcast / mailbag podcast, because it is the bye week. Let's jump right back into some of your questions. I really like this one from Jay Jones, 164, in our comment section. He says, since Patricia took over, there's only a handful of players from the Caldwell era that lasted 3 years here, besides Don Muehlbach. Which 3 to 5 players do you think are schematically fluid enough to stick around 3+ years in the next regime?
Oh, boy. Taylor Decker, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I mean, I don't think left tackles really grow on trees. So, yep. It's weird. We were talking in the break about, you know, the one thing to be optimistic about the Lions in the future is their offensive line. But I mean, I'd be really excited about the prospect of Frank Ragnow.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be really excited about Jonah Jackson.
Yep.
Like I think that side of the line is just fantastic. Like, sure, you don't got to worry about it. I think that'll transfer into anybody's scheme. Like, good offensive linemen anywhere are good offensive linemen anywhere.
Anyone on defense? Anyone? Bueller?
Amani Arariye?
Okay. What about Okuda, maybe? Too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And can we like pump the brakes on like Jeff Okuda? It might be bad.
He was fine on Sunday, by the way. Like, he gave up 2 catches. Chill.
Yeah. And I mean, we talked about the gauntlet that he had to run through at the beginning of the season when it was Devontae Adams and DeAndre Hopkins. Literal baptism by fire. Trying to think. Daron Harmon?
I can say yes for that. He's a good leader. And will he be like a bona fide starter, stud, Pro Bowler? Probably not. But I like him back there. And he's definitely versatile enough to fit, I think, any scheme as a free safety.
For sure. Because I think that he can just play that middle of the field role, and he can do that. So, but man, the rest of the defense, maybe Danny Shelton.
I've seen enough where I like him.
But like, again, maybe he just wouldn't work in like a 4-3 scheme.
Yeah. I don't know. He at times he's like twitchy enough where I could be like, maybe he could be like a predominant 3 tech in a 4-3, but it's hard to say. I mean, he plays a little bit of 3 tech anyways. Like, that's mm-hmm. how the Lions like to use their nose. So, maybe. And then there's also Tracy Walker, which he had a nice rebound game on Sunday, but still, I don't know, at this point, you're stuck with some of these defensive players, especially the young guys like Jelani Tavai and Jared Davis and Will Harris. It's like, are these guys that untalented, or is it coaching? Like, I don't know, because they haven't been coached by anyone else.
Sure. Well, I mean, Jared Davis, for sure. I think you can kind of write the book on him. Probably. Yeah, at this point. But Kenny Golladay.
Yeah, Kenny Golladay. TJ Hockenson. I think he's definitely going to be a stud in this league. So let's add him.
I'm not going to be unfair. Yeah, TJ Hockenson can play.
Okay, so we came up with like 7, 8.
And four of them are basically offensive linemen.
That's a foundation, Ryan. Throw in a veteran quarterback and we're good.
Hell yeah, brother.
Come to Detroit, whoever our dream coach is. All right. Next question comes from Gonzalez QES. Why aren't they playing Julian Okwara more? He was one of the offseason additions that was supposed to help a moribund pass rushing team. And he's a healthy scratch in some games, ? Do you have a theory?
No, because I don't understand. I don't understand because I don't understand their approach to Tracy Walker in the beginning of the season. And, sure. He struggled in those first two games. But I think maybe that might be a mental thing. Right. You're not out there. You're not playing. You were just like a starter a year ago. Like, what the heck? You know, so. But we saw the same thing with A'shaun Robinson. Like, he was a healthy scratch. And then all of a sudden he had a really, really good, 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2018 season. But that was a pretty talented defensive line. So I guess you can kind of count on the other guys to pick you up there versus, Tracy Walker. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to defend the coaching staff a little bit here. I mean, first of all, you have to realize rookie might not be ready. Jeff Okuda is a great example of that. I don't know if Jeff Okuda would really be playing all that much if it weren't for the injury to Desmond Trufant. He didn't start last week. And maybe he would be playing even Desmond Trufant was healthy, because Trufant has been not so good as of late. And a lot of it has to do with his, I think, Julian Okwara's lack of versatility. I think right now he's purely a pass rusher, and the Lions are so bad at the run that they don't get into a lot of situations where they need a pure pass rusher. They put Julian Okwara out there on 1st and 10. They risk themselves of getting beat off the edge because it's not something he's necessarily good at yet. It's not something he's developed yet. It's not something he did a lot in Notre Dame. So I think it was, who was it? Can't remember who exactly it was on the Lions defense said exactly that. Like, we're not getting a pass rush because we're not getting into pass rush situations. We're not stopping the run. We're getting into 2nd and 4s and 3rd and 2s and 3rd and 1s. And I mean, all you have to do is look at that Saints game. I feel like every single 3rd down conversion, the reason why they were 10 of 12 or whatever they were on 3rd down, is because almost all of them were 3rd and 4 or less.
Yeah. And was that Trey Flowers?
I think it was Trey Flowers. Trey Flowers.
Speaking of which, maybe another guy who would, but I don't know, would he be as versatile in any scheme, Trey Flowers? I think you'd find a spot for him, right?
Yeah. I feel like a lot of these guys who are starters here would be more rotational guys elsewhere. And not that Trey Flowers couldn't be a starter elsewhere, but he's not going to be your feature edge rusher, right? Like, he's not going to be the guy who gets you 3 sacks of games and 2 forced fumbles. Like, that's just not Trey Flowers' game.
He's not Chandler Jones. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's my theory on Julian Okwara. I think we'll still see progressively more of him as we go on. He's only really been a healthy scratch once. He's getting about 5 to 15 snaps a game, which I know doesn't seem like enough, and it probably isn't enough, but he's still very raw. I think anyone will tell you that. People who wrote their profiles on him, their draft profiles on him, said, like, it's going to take a while with him, and it is, and the Lions aren't doing him any favors by not getting into any situations which they need him. So I think it's a combination of all that. Next question. Speaking of underused, MillerTime131 asks, if DeAndre Swift catches that pass, I think we're feeling good going into the bye. The shitty thing is that it really is a game of inches. With that being said, can we dig ourselves out of this hole, or is the season basically over? Let's start at the beginning here. Are you actually feeling a lot better about this team if Swift catches that pass? I know that's kind of an impossible question to answer, because obviously we're living in a time when that didn't happen. But 2-2 is not a bad record going into the bye, especially considering you know, that would have included a win over a divisional opponent that would have brought the Bears down to 2-2. And so suddenly the Lions are tied for second in the NFC North. Would you feel better?
No. Okay. And the reason why I wouldn't feel better is because context, as always, matters. Sure. Mm-hmm. And you look at the way that that Bears game just completely unraveled. You look at the way that the Saints game, after the first 5 minutes, completely unraveled. You look at the way that Green Bay, I mean, granted, the Lions got out to a, you know, a quick lead. I mean, they were dominated from, you know, what, the second quarter on.
Yeah,
it was really bad. I think that, again, like the proof is there, like they're getting beat badly by teams that are both good and bad. I don't think the Bears are good. I think the Bears are pretenders. I don't think they're very good. The Saints, I don't know if the Saints are very good. I think their defense, I mean, they were missing players when the Lions played them on Sunday, but their defense is really suspect. I don't think I would feel any better about this team if they were 2-2.
I'm mostly there with you. I think I'm still a little bit more optimistic than most Lions fans. I think this is a team still very much capable of winning 7 games this year. I know that doesn't sound very optimistic considering, you know, a lot of people are predicting them to win 10, 11 games, but mm-hmm. I mean, they have been close. I mean, they're a third down stop away from maybe winning the game against the Saints, even though that's a game they probably didn't deserve to win at all. Mm-hmm. But I do think it shows that like they're capable. If they had so many opportunities against the Saints to get a stop on third down throughout the entire game, and if they make just one or two of those, then I think the game might look completely different. And so it is a game of inches. This is a team that's still, I think, going to play a lot of 50-50 ball games this year, and I think they'll win hopefully at least 50 of them and still contend. Now, does DeAndre Swift catching a ball really change any of that? I mean, not really. How I feel is how I feel. I like to think that I'm judging the team on their body of work rather than just a raw statistic like record. But I do still think this team is a little bit better than most people are giving them credit for at 1-3.
Yeah, I mean, I said it after they lost the second game to the Packers. You know, are the Lions really, really bad, or did they play two good teams? I know the Bears aren't good. Yeah. I know the Packers are they're for sure. They're legit.
Yeah.
Their other loss, though, I think the Saints were a beatable team, and they had them in a really, really good situation. You know, missing, you know, maybe their top offensive weapon, missing Marshawn Lattimore, missing Janoris Jenkins. You know, that was a game that the Lions should have won.
No question. No question. Yeah. So, I mean, we're still kind of in the information gathering phase, though. You know, it's the mm-hmm. first month of the season. We'll see how some of these, like Arizona. Is Arizona a good team? They looked good coming in. Now they're 2-2. Is that a good win? Is that a bad win? Is that just a win against a mediocre team? Something we'll still probably have to figure out later. Yeah. All right. Next question. From LKP on Pride of Detroit. I kind of reduced his question because it was very long. Rank the Lions' issues on defense. We got four categories here. They're playing too much man coverage. They're not blitzing enough, or they're inefficient in their blitzes. Their run defense sucks. They don't have a premier pass rusher. Number one.
Their number one problem is stopping the run.
That is correct. Yes.
I mean, it just, you can take a look at the Packers game. You can take a look at the Saints game. I mean, those are like exhibit A and exhibit B of how bad the Lions are at stopping the run, right?
Yep.
The outlier game is Arizona, because for some reason they were able to contain Kyler Murray and Kenyon Drake.
That's been their MO though. Like they've been able to stop mobile quarterbacks. And that's the only thing this defense has been consistent about, is being able to stop mobile quarterbacks, and that's it.
Yeah, because I mean, they did a pretty respectable job on Mitchell Trubisky in week one.
Yeah.
But the running backs for the Bears, yeah, that's a different story. But yeah, especially I think it's their biggest problem too, Jeremy, because you have a head coach who his whole defensive philosophy relies on that first and foremost. Yep. So.
Yeah, and it goes back to what I was saying before. If you can't stop the run, then you're not getting yourselves into pass rushing downs.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing falls apart from there. If you're consistently in third and twos, this defense does not work.
Yeah.
Just doesn't.
Yeah. And I'm going to have to, for the second biggest problem, I'm going to say that it's too much man coverage. Okay. I don't think the Lions are lacking a premier pass rusher in terms of what they want to do with their scheme. Like, they got Trey Flowers. I think Trey Flowers, while he is not, you know, Chandler Jones, he's not Von Miller, he's not, you know, some guy who's going to get you 16 sacks in a season, but he's a guy who can pressure the quarterback. But the problem is, I think the Lions, they preach versatility. You know, they're going to have all these defensive players that could do all these different things. Then why is the only thing you're running man coverage? Like, was it like 80% of the time? And then all of a sudden in the Cardinals game, they switch things up and three interceptions.
I have an issue with the whole man coverage thing. It seemed like it was just kind of an easy, convenient talking point for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the issue, is that they played a heck of a lot of zone last week, and Drew Brees beat the pants out of him. I think he completed like 89% of his passes against zone, and it was almost a 50-50 split again. I think it was like 60-40, which isn't that much, man. I think a lot of teams do predominantly man, but not to the point where it was like 80-20 or whatever it was through the first two games.
Right.
I think this is just like, that's an overly simplistic way of seeing how bad this defense is, because it's bad everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The, you know, man coverage is tough for a lot of these guys, but you know what zone coverage relies a lot upon? Your linebackers. And you know what the Lions don't have any good of? Linebackers.
Athletic linebackers.
Yeah. And so there isn't. Yeah. I mean, I understand the thought that you just need to vary things up. It's not about you just need to play more zone. It's about varying things up. But the Lions are doing that now, and it's not helping.
But yeah, I think my point is that if you're a team that has like as many safeties as they have, take a linebacker off the field. Like, you have a guy like Will Harris.
Take them all off the field. You got Jaron Kearse back now. You got four safeties. Play them all.
Play them all and Jamie Collins. That's it.
Yeah. Come up with that package. All right. Yeah. We got two more remaining ones. What? Oh, lack of blitzing and no premier pass rusher. What's your three? What's your four?
I think I'm going to sandwich two and three like together right next to each other, and it's going to be blitz and like not dialing up more blitzes. And I think that kind of just goes back to my lack of faith in Patricia as a defensive mind. Like, for whatever reason, like his choice when it comes to defensive game plans is poo poo. And when it comes to dialing up the blitz, it isn't a thing with him. So, yeah.
Fair enough. I think I'm with you on the blitz stuff. I think I'd like to see a little bit more of it. I'd like to see him be a little more creative with it. They're moving around the defensive front a lot. Like, we'll see Trey Flowers at the nose every now and then just because, and that's cool. And sometimes it works, but they need to be bringing some pressure. They can't let Drew Brees sit back there and pick him apart like they did last week.
Don't you think that's kind of the problem, though? Like, with them, like, for instance, right, they played the Saints last week. If you want to play more man, because you don't want to play zone, because Drew Brees will like quickly pick you apart, like right off the snap, like play man, play press, but then send pressure too.
Yeah.
Like let make Drew Brees beat you that way. Like, why get away from that if that's what you want to do? It seems like those two things need to be married together better. Like, if you're going to play so much man, you need to pass rush. You need to blitz way more often.
I'm with you there.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the next question from our buddy Josh Harrington. He asks, how concerned are you about Stafford's extremely inconsistent play?
Oh, I'm so scared. I'm terrified. This is the most disappointing part of the season, I think, for me personally. I think the most disappointing thing right now is Matthew Stafford's play, because I think we were all so sure that, you know what, if the Lions would have had eight more games of Matthew Stafford last season, you know, maybe they wouldn't have made the playoffs, but they would have at least been like knocking on the door in November.
Right.
We wouldn't have been having to watch David Blau on Thanksgiving, you know? So I think that Matthew Stafford's performance this season is the most troubling thing moving forward, because what it means is I think if there's another regime change, maybe Matthew Stafford's not the guy.
That is a definite possibility. There's no question that we could be seeing the beginning of the end of Matthew Stafford in Detroit, and whether that means drafting one next year and sitting him on the bench a la Jordan Love, or trading him in the offseason. All those things I think are on the table if there's a whole regime change. All that is true. In terms of his play this year, I'm still holding out hope. I'm still...
Oh, me too.
I wouldn't say I'm not concerned. He hasn't been good through four games. I think even, you know, the biggest Stafford homers, which I would almost put myself in that category,
would
admit that things have not been going well. But I do think they're still trying to figure things out offensively. I think they're trying to figure out how to put DeAndre Swift into this offense. I feel like they're still adjusting to Kenny Galladay being back and what's Marvin Hall's role. Is he a pure number three, or do they like bringing in Quintus Cephas? And I would have loved for them to have all that figured out in the offseason. Maybe the shortened offseason is to blame, whatever. Other teams seem to have figured it out quick enough. But I feel like something's not clicking overall with the offense. And it's making Matthew Stafford look a little bit worse than he actually is. He's not good, and the accuracy issues are real, and some of the decision-making too. But I do feel like it's going to click at some point and at some point soon, so I'm not too concerned.
It's the consistency with the offense, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they're totally devastating in spurts. I mean, just look at last week versus New Orleans. I mean, first drive touchdown, and then, you know, interception turns into another touchdown. Then where did the offense go for 3.5 quarters?
Nowhere. All right, next question comes from Sodanad, Ashley on Twitter. She asks, should we be buyers or sellers at the trade deadline? Who should we trade or trade for? This is an interesting question because trade deadline will sneak up on you. It comes at the end of this month. And, you know, the Lions don't play for another week, so it's literally only about 3 weeks away. Obviously, I think the answer to this question depends on how the Lions perform in the next couple games. But what do you think? Do you think the Lions are going to be active at the trade deadline? Are you foreseeing? Obviously, I think if we had to guess right now, they'd probably be sellers. Do you see any of that playing out?
How much of them being buyers or sellers do you think depends on like how Quinn feels about his job security?
That's another huge factor in this, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, if he thinks that he's going to get another year, maybe he's just going to be a seller and he's going to try to get more assets, more draft assets. Maybe he's going to try to accumulate draft picks so that he can try to get more players that way. If he thinks that he's as good as gone, then why do anything?
Or get aggressive and be like, shit, I got to do something to save my do something to save my job in the last 6 months of the or 6 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I got to trade Jack Fox.
No, that's not how you do this. No.
Be honest. What do you think the Lions could get for Jack Fox?
Stop it. The sixth rounder, maybe? I don't know.
Oh, then we're keeping Jack Fox.
Right. I mean, he's a punter one. He's not signed beyond this year, too.
Oh, well, I was going to say he is a punter one. He's P1.
He's P1. Yeah, I mean, I do think we should start considering the Lions potentially being sellers. If this was a normal season, it would make sense for them to be sellers.
Mm-hmm.
The name I always keep going back to when I start thinking about this is Marvin Jones. Exactly. Yeah. The question is, what's his value at right now? Because he's not playing particularly well. His statistics have really dropped in the past two seasons. He had a ton of touchdowns last year, but I think his yards per catch dropped significantly and they're even lower this year. So, you're probably not getting a ton of value out of that trade. I would say fourth, maybe fifth, maybe like a fourth and a sixth. Is that worth it? I mean, probably still if your season's over, but yeah. You're not getting a Golden Tate type of trade.
Do you know who I wouldn't be shocked to see be interested in Marvin Jones?
Patriots?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe if the Eagles can get their act together and become buyers, they've certainly been in need for a wide receiver, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that there could be a market that ends up developing for Marvin Jones. But like I said, or like you said, Jeremy, I don't think it's going to be anything that's going to really bring back anything of like big time value.
Right. Is there anyone else?
Not like a Darius Slay trade or anything like that.
Right. Is there anyone else you see maybe on? I mean, it's hard when the defense is playing so bad to see any defensive pieces that would get you anything on the trade market. But is there anyone there that you say like maybe?
No,
No. No. I think you're probably right. Like, trade Daron Harmon back to the Patriots, maybe.
Yeah, like, you're not going to... If you're Quinn and you're Patricia, you're not trading any of your guys. Like, you're not going to trade Danny Shelton, even though he's playing really well, or you're not going to trade Jamie Collins, even though he's playing pretty well.
Yeah. You're right. Someone's throwing Deshaun Hand out there in the chat. Do you think he's got any value right now?
Can he stay on the field?
Hey, no injuries so far. All right, last question before we close things out. From Nate Savage, at Savage underscore Nate on Twitter. He asks, with one of the easiest schedules remaining in the league, what are your projections for the remaining year? What do the Lions need to do to hit on all the cylinders and maybe win a couple games back to back? All right, let's look at the next seven games. This supposed easy schedule ahead. We've got Jacksonville in Jacksonville coming out of the break, at the Falcons, Colts, who are 3-1, Vikings, Washington, Panthers, Texans. Give me a record for those seven games.
I was going to be really dumb and say 4-2-1. I could see 4-3.
Well, okay. So you actually are a little bit more optimistic than I thought you were.
Yeah, I could see 4-3 just because, I mean, you said one team who just fired their head coach and GM. You said one team who is now on Kyle Allen as their starter.
Yeah.
I mean, Jacksonville doesn't seem like, I mean, they're like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I mean, sure. One week they're giving the Titans a run for their money. The next week they're getting beat by the Miami Dolphins. And then the Atlanta Falcons. Like, I can't wait for all of the Spider-Man memes to pop out for that game. Because that's just going to be a contest of, like, who wants to lose?
Who blows the lead last?
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, I could see 4-3, and what, that would take the Lions record to 5-6?
Hey.
Am I doing my math right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so 5-6. And then, of course, the other side is that then you got the Bears, Packers, Titans, Bucks, Vikings.
Loss.
Right. Let's not talk about that, though. We're talking. I don't know. I'm 4-3. If I had to pick, honestly, I'd probably say 3-4, which is why I thought you were being a little bit more optimistic. Yes, all these teams are beatable, but so are the Lions. And, like, yeah. I don't know. I see a team like the Falcons, and I see, like, that team's going to score a lot of points against us. Julio's probably going to be back by the time we face them. They're a high-flying offense. They like to throw the ball a ton. And maybe a high-flying team is actually what this team needs. Maybe they just need a team that won't run it down their throats, and they want to throw it a ton. But, I mean, I don't know. We'll have to see until we see one of those teams.
Right. Maybe Desmond Trufant is the elixir for Julio Jones because he's a former teammate. Or maybe. Or just maybe he might get absolutely obliterated by Julio Jones.
Well, here's the thing. I maybe not totally bought in, but I was like, I'd never even thought about this. So I'm like, Desmond Trufant's played against the Saints a lot. He's, you know, he might be an extra little weapon this week.
Narrator voice. He wasn't.
He wasn't. All right. I think that's going to do it for our first bite. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back on Sunday. Sundays at 7 p.m. here on our Twitch channel. We'll have our full POD cast as it normally runs, even though there won't be a post game to talk about. We're also having a special event on Saturday on our Twitch page only. We're going to do some karaoke again just for fun. So if you need some fun in your life, come to our Twitch page Saturday night. I'm not sure on the time yet, but make sure you go over there. But until then, it's chaos. Be kind. See you Sunday.